as the man who openly invited a foreign enemy to hack his opponent in the election. But here's the funny part of it. And I read this story in the Times. I thought, oh, wow, good. We're finally doing something to fight back against these Russian cyber attacks. And then Trump said, not true. Anything goes with our corrupt news media today. They'll do or say whatever it takes with not even the slightest thought of consequence. These are true cowards and without a doubt the enemy of the people. So he says it is not true. We aren't going after Russia. But sources inside the Pentagon and the intelligence community told the Times the reason that he's saying it's not true is because they didn't tell him about this. They were hesitant to share the plan because he might discuss it with foreign officials and compromise the mission. Basically, they didn't tell him for the same reason my wife didn't tell my 4-year-old what they got me for Father's Day. So we're in good little hands, everybody.
Even intelligence officials don't trust Trump with sensitive information when it comes to Russia.
The United States is reportedly ramping up cyber attacks on Russia's electric power grid. And the New York Times says potentially crippling malware has been placed deeper into the Russian grid than ever before.
This from the New York Times story. Two administration officials said they believe Mr. Trump had not been briefed in any detail. Pentagon intelligence officials described broad hesitation to go into detail with Mr. Trump about operations against Russia for concern over his reaction and the possibility he might countermand it or discuss it with foreign officials.
Wow, they can't even give the President of the United States sensitive details about Russia because they're afraid he'll blab about it to Putin.
Impeachment in no way guarantees a president's removal from office. In fact, no president has ever actually been removed through this process. Two presidents have been impeached, Clinton and Johnson, but remained in office, and Nixon actually resigned on his own before the House could finish impeaching him. Here is how the impeachment process works. Typically, it begins with an inquiry in the House of Representatives, during which a committee investigates and holds hearings into a president's conduct. And if a majority decides they found impeachable offenses, they vote to impeach. But that is not the end. That merely moves the process to the Senate, where a trial is held. And the president is only removed from office if a 2/3 majority votes for that. So what is the case for putting this president through that process? Well, the Constitution says grounds for impeachment are treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors. And that last phrase can trip people up, even people who might really want to research its exact definition.
There was no crime. You know, it's high crimes and, not with or. It's high crimes and misdemeanors. There was no high crime and there was no misdemeanor. So how do you impeach based on that?
Okay, clearly, high crimes and misdemeanors doesn't literally mean there has to be both a big crime and a little crime. Oh, well, the president's committed murder. Now we just need to catch him urinating on the side of a Wawa and we got him. No, that's not how anything works. Because the fact is, high crimes and misdemeanors can include acts that are not actual crimes. It is a broad term for serious misconduct. And Congress is currently looking into a wide range of Trump's potential misconduct, from campaign finance violations to whether or not he's used his office to enrich himself. But one area where we already have considerable evidence against Trump is obstruction of justice. It's a very serious allegation. It was among the articles of impeachment approved against both Nixon and Clinton. Obstruction was also half of Robert Mueller's report, in which he laid out 10 potential instances of it taking place. And we clearly don't have time to get into all 10. So let's just look at one involving Don McGahn, who was Trump's White House counsel. McGahn's appearance in the Mueller report got a lot of attention when it first came out, primarily because of one eye-catching quote.
Former White House counsel Don McGahn, he refused to ask Rod Rosenstein to fire Mueller and threatened to resign instead after the president asked him to do, quote, crazy, using a word that I can't use on TV.
The word is Don McGahn said the president, and I quote, asked him to do crazy. But that phrase actually became unhelpfully distracting because the fact the president's lawyer said a naughty word kept people from focusing on the details of what Trump actually asked him to do, which many argue amounted to flagrant obstruction. Trump asked McGahn to have Robert Mueller, the person investigating him, fired. Specifically, according to McGahn, under oath, Trump told him Mueller has to go, adding, call me back when you do it, then calling him back and asking, have you done it? So this is clearly something very important to Trump. This was something Trump was really serious about. But the potential obstruction didn't stop there, because a second instance Mueller cited came after news broke that Trump had tried to remove Mueller. And Trump tried to get McGahn to put out a statement denying it, and also said he wanted McGahn to write a letter to that effect for our records. So, to recap there, it seems the president obstructed justice, then obstructed justice again to try to obstruct the investigation into his obstruction of justice. It's ridiculous. I know that this might seem like a legal technicality and a couple of phone calls that didn't go anywhere, but here's why this really matters. But for Don McGahn, Trump might have stopped an investigation into himself. And if a president can shut down an investigation, he can basically do anything with no consequences. It's a big deal. And I know that we've all become numb to Trump by this point, but moments like that really shock you out of your stupor and make you think, oh, hang on, that guy's got to be impeached. We've got to impeach him. And look, should Democrats let House investigations play out a little further before they make a move? I don't know, maybe. There's an argument for that. That strategy certainly paid off during Watergate, but later can't mean never. Because the case for inaction here is starting to get pretty weak.
Now, impeachment talk is increasing among the Democrats, and it's begun to divide the party. Some members of the House want Trump impeached immediately. But Speaker Nancy Pelosi is resisting these calls, saying, I don't want to see him impeached. I want to see him in prison.
He thought he was the smartest guy in town. But I found out last Monday that Bob got locked up Sunday. He's in the jailhouse now. I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now.
Keeps going on TV and giving us more evidence against him. Meanwhile, Democrats are having a weird debate over whether they should impeach him or focus on beating him in 2020. If anything, it seems like the answer is simple.
You do both.
President Trump kicking off his reelection campaign at a massive rally in Florida.
Tonight, you saw the president actually poll the audience by applause on what his slogan should be.
Now I'm saying, what do we use as our theme, as our statement? Let me just hear by your cheers what you like. First, we do Make America Great Again. Let me hear it. Ready? Make America Great Again. Not bad. Not bad. Destroy our country as we know it. Pretty good. Bad. Health insurance. Impeach him. Thank you.
Truly exists. I cry watching the days. Can't you see? Hugo, there's something I want you to have.
Oh, it's beautiful. But wait a minute, isn't this...
Yeah, yes it is.
But I thought the old lady dropped it into the ocean in the air.
Well, baby, I went down and got it for you.
Oh, you shouldn't have.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Chris Forsyth and the Solar Motel Band ask, have we mistaken the bottle for the whiskey inside?
Thank you.
You just heard Modu Mokhtar with his Taradas from his Blue Stage Sessions album from 2019.
Crow T Robot from Mystery Science Theater 3000 here on 90.7 WGXC. What's the C stand for? Crow, I'm pretty sure. Yep. Maybe not.
Tune in or turn out. On the last day of the WGXC Testify Pledge Drive, we'll be at the Back Bar in Hudson from noon to 4 p.m. The broadcast starts at 11 a.m. with Cheryl Kay on the radio at 90.7 FM. Neva Wartell's Music for the Masses comes on later at 1 p.m., but all day we'll be live at the Back Bar in Hudson on Warren Street. Stop by and say hello. Tune in or turn out to the last day of the WGXC Testify Pledge Drive. Pledge Drive at the Back Bar in Hudson, Sunday, June 23rd.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Wendy Schmaltz of Claverick, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
America must make amends for the horrors of slavery. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Juneteenth is a celebration of freedom. The name comes from a combination of the two words and the date, June 19th. On that day in 1865, 250,000 slaves in Texas were freed by a Union Army general who'd arrived with troops in Galveston the day before. The Civil War had ended more than a month earlier, but word of the war's end took time to reach parts of Texas. By the end of 1865, the 13th Amendment had been ratified, formally outlawing slavery across the United States. It was an incredible victory, but the trajectory of systemic racism in the United States did not end there, as we all know too well. Indeed, the real-world impacts of slavery on today's African-American population were front and center in Washington, D.C. this week, as historic hearings and public gatherings convened to discuss, debate, and organize around reparations and poverty, and to offer a vision for a more just and equitable nation. On Wednesday, Juneteenth, the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing on H.R. 40, the Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African Americans Act. It was introduced by Democratic Congress member Sheila Jackson Lee of Houston this year, after former Congressmember John Conyers had championed the bill for decades without success. As the name implies, all the bill seeks to do is establish a study to explore the issue of reparations, but opposition to it is fierce. Among those testifying in support of H.R. 40 were Senator Cory Booker, who's sponsoring the companion bill in the Senate, actor and activist Danny Glover, economist Julianne Malveaux, Katrina Brown, who traces her roots to a wealthy Rhode Island slave trader family, and author Ta-Nehisi Coates. Coates' sweeping 2014 article in The Atlantic, The Case for Reparations, reignited the discussion around how we as a society must make amends for the horror of slavery. On Tuesday, a young African-American reporter, Eva McKend, asked Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell whether the government should issue a public apology for slavery. This was his response.
I don't think reparations for something that happened 150 years ago, for whom none of us currently living are responsible, is a good idea.
Ta-Nehisi Coates opened his testimony before the House Judiciary Committee on Reparations by saying,
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell,
offered a familiar reply. America should not be held liable for something that happened 150 years ago, since none of us currently alive are responsible. This rebuttal proffers a strange theory of governance, that American accounts are somehow bound by the lifetime of its generations. But well into this century, the United States was still paying out pensions to the heirs of Civil War soldiers. We honor treaties that date back some 200 years, despite no one being alive who signed those treaties. Many of us would love to be taxed for the things we are solely and individually responsible for. But we are American citizens, and thus bound to a collective enterprise that extends beyond our individual and personal reach. It would seem ridiculous to dispute invocations of the founders or the greatest generation on the basis of a lack of membership in either group. We recognize our lineage as a generational trust, as inheritance. And the real dilemma posed by reparations is just that, a dilemma of inheritance. It is impossible to imagine America without the inheritance of slavery.
Also on Wednesday, Juneteenth, another rare hearing took place. The Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, presented a Poor People's Moral Budget to the House Budget Committee. The budget rejects austerity and calls for massive military spending cuts, fair taxes on the wealthy, corporations, and Wall Street, and details billions more in savings from ending mass incarceration, tackling climate change, and pursuing other progressive goals. The budget hearing was part of a three-day Moral Action Congress convened by the Poor People's Campaign, co-chaired by the Reverends William Barber and Liz Theo Harris. It's a renewal of the Poor People's Campaign launched by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in the last year of his life. This is Reverend Barber.
It is tragic in a society where our first constitutional duty is to establish justice and promote the general welfare, that we will allow the injustice of poverty. 43.5% of poor people are poverty and low wealth, and people here who could teach this society, and we would walk away from our constitutional values and walk away from our spiritual values that tell us that it is dangerous for a nation not to lift up the poor.
On Monday, the Poor People's Campaign hosted a Democratic presidential candidates forum with nine of the Democratic hopefuls attending. Opening the six-hour session, Reverend Barber noted poverty was never directly addressed during the 2016 presidential debates.
43.5% of this nation. Not 30, not 23, but almost half of this nation. And any nation that ignores half of its people, half of the people, is in a moral and economic crisis that is constitutionally inconsistent, economically insane, and morally indefensible.
Former Vice President Joe Biden was the first to speak at the Poor People's Campaign presidential forum, to his credit. But to the shock of many, just the next night, he attended a high-end fundraiser for his own campaign in New York City, where he hearkened back to his early days in the Senate, recalling the quote-unquote civility of bygone days, working with two segregationist senators, Herman Talmadge and James Eastland. According to a Poole report, Biden said, "I was in a caucus with James O. Eastland. He never called me boy. He always called me son," Biden said. Of course, for Eastland, a Mississippi Democratic senator from 1943 to 78, the word boy, and much worse, was reserved for African Americans, who Eastland referred to as an inferior race. The backlash against Biden's remarks has been intense. We can only imagine the joy felt by those newly freed men, women, and children in Galveston, Texas, on that original Juneteenth, June 19th, 1865. But this week, in the halls of Congress and around Washington, D.C., echoes of their celebrations are manifest as people organize for long overdue racial and economic justice. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Saturday with a high of 73
and a low around 55. Sunday should also be sunny with a high of 77 and a low around 56. Monday, there is a 20% chance of isolated showers after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 79 and a low around 61. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson Radio for Open Ears.
You know, I was listening to the radio, and I heard this thing!
90.7 FM, listener-supported radio.
Fahrenheit is your flavor.
21 degrees Celsius. It's the temperature right now. It's getting warmer. Warmer.
Radio Wonderland is next. 10:30, we tune in to Joshua Freed remake New York City Radio on the Hudson Valley Dial.
Frequencies live, WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.